This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 5th of May 2015 on Monocle 24. And welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Andrew Muller. It's Tuesday, which means music. And our guest this week with his pick of recent-ish releases is the critic and broadcaster Pete Perfides. Pete can be heard weekly on Soho Radio and read monthly in the pages of Mojo and Q, among other journals. He's also the author of A History of Lloyd Cole and the Commotions, which will appear in their imminent career-spanning box set. Today, Pete will be playing us a singer-songwriter from Chicago, a constituent part of Monocle favourite St. Etienne, and the latest incarnation of Tallulah Gosch. That's all to come here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Pete Perfides, welcome to the Arts Review on Monocle 24. We did mention there in the introduction that you can be heard weekly on Soho Radio. Do you want to narrow it down for us a bit? Roughly when each week and doing what?
Well, midday, every Tuesday, I a fairly open-ended, mostly music-based show. And the thing I like, because I'm anal and like you, I fear change, is that it's, to the best of my knowledge, Soho Radio is the only station that just as a matter of course has two record decks into which, and you play sort of vinyl as a matter of course.
Wow.
So I get to, in my subconscious mind, the being a DJ, really, my template for being a DJ is, it goes back to kind of old footage of Noel Edmonds presenting The Breakfast Show in 1979. So I get to that kind of pastel upholstered 70s studio kind of version of being a DJ. I get to kind of pretend that it's that, but obviously with rather better music. And then I have guests rather like yourself. They do live sessions and they're often really brilliant. And or just anyone who might be, especially tangentially of interest to the locale, which is Soho, obviously. And Soho and central London is obviously a great place to run a radio station from, because they're just kind of, well-known and interesting people literally walking past all the time.
So, yeah, I remember the twin record decks thing. Several centuries ago in Sydney, I did a show on an inner city radio station that did have that set up. And I would like to apologise to anybody who is listening now who was listening the night when on the midnight till 3 a.m. show, both turntables broke down in the first half hour.
Ooh.
And then one of the cartridge machines.
Oh, my word.
That was a long night for all of us,
I
suspect.
A sort of an exceptionally discursive show.
It was exceptionally discursive, except being only about 19 years old at the time, I didn't really have all that much to say.
No.
I mean, once I'd done my entire life story, it was still 2:15 and I don't know what we're doing for the next 45 minutes.
Oh, God.
Yeah. One should probably not tempt the fates at the top of a program with that sort of anecdotage. The music you've brought in three tracks, the first of which is by a gentleman called Riley Walker. That's R-Y-L-E-Y,
yes,
controversial
indeed.
Spelling of Riley. introduce Riley Walker to us, if you would.
Well, he's just released his second album, Primrose Green, which is the album we're going to hear a song from. He's from Illinois, and you only need to listen to him for a fairly brief amount of time to see what influences he's steeped in. I think vocally, he's quite a close approximation to Bert Jansch, who I'm a huge fan of. And you can hear sort of, you can detect the DNA of Pentangle. More to the point, what I think is really exciting, and I think even if you're sort of trying to do pastiche, and I think this kind of surpasses pastiche quite considerably, to aim for that very, very loose, intuitive, improvisational thing that you hear on Van Morrison's Astral Weeks, or those sort of Happy Sad by Tim Buckley, the records that really do are emblematic of an era in music when wonderful studios were being used to capture moments of fantastic serendipitous genius, using the very best engineers and musicians. And I think this is a really sort of an underrated thing when we're discussing what makes some of our greatest records really great, especially from the late 60s and early 70s, sort of jazz musicians. And there's a definite jazz zip to what Riley Walker does. It's essentially kind of folk rock, but with a definite sort of a very liberal, loose, kind of free-flowing jazz element to it. And I think it works like an absolute dream on this album.
Okay, well, let's hear some of it. This is Summer Dress from the album Primrose Green. This is Riley Walker. Summer Dress by Riley Walker, the first selection of our Music Arts Review guest, Pete Perfides. The influences you mentioned there, the Van Morrison, the Tim Buckley, you can hear them all, but it's quite unusual for that folk tradition from, I guess, this side of the Atlantic to take root on that side of the Atlantic, which I guess why is Tim Buckley is an obvious point of reference.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I don't know, these sort of canonical artists now are accessible to people of all ages, and I've noticed even through the music that my oldest daughter, especially, who's 14 now, is listening to, there isn't, you know, it's kind of, you can't really speak anymore of, it's hard to speak of the generational divide, at least understand it in the way that we might have understood it ourselves as children. You know, it's not linear anymore because people can access any music they want from any period and sort of cherry pick it. And I guess Riley Walker is still a very young guy. And I think, you know, like a lot of emerging musicians, especially from the alternative scene on both sides of the Atlantic, he's something of an autodidact, because you can be that these days without sort of having things mediated. In some ways, that's a bad thing, because it's led to the death of the music press, and some of us have had to kind of go further afield to sort of earn money. But generally, I think it's you know, it's an amazing thing to hear someone that young just make such brilliantly assured music.
It must be really interesting from your perspective to watch a 14-year-old in your house discovering music through this entirely new fashion, because people of our vintage had to do the thing of reading about stuff in music magazines and tracking it down, obviously, you know, quite often at great expense of time, money, effort, yeah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do you notice your kids reacting differently when they can just flip open a laptop or indeed turn on their telephone and listen to anything they damn well please almost instantly? Are they less intrigued? Do they invest less in it?
That what I've noticed with my, I think it really kind of is down to sort of what it is that piques the interest of a particular child. My youngest, who's 11, seems very interested in the stories that surround certain bands. So she's obsessed with the myth of the Beatles. She, you know, like me, you know, she sort of feels that this is the greatest story ever told, because it contains every kind of variation on human drama, and, you know, that sort of exists. And Dora, the oldest one, she watches a lot of films, and she bears testament to the fact that if you just have a curious mind, you know, you'll just find the stuff. But you have to be curious enough to want to sort of improve, you know, your aesthetic, and to broaden your aesthetic. If that's not there in the first place, it doesn't really matter what era you live in. You're just not going to be that curious. So that's kind of been instructive for me, because initially I was quite cynical about the fact that everything's kind of laid on a plate for you. And I quite like the fact that when I grew up, I would kind of scour the details on the 7-inch single and remember the names to see if I could find clues that would lead me to another record. And I thought, in a funny kind of way, I thought you learn more that way. But that I'm sort of realizing that it really is just down to you know, how curious you are to, as I say, broaden your sort of spectrum.
Okay, well, your second selection today is The Voice, at least, will be no stranger to regular listeners of Monocle 24, because Saint Etienne do appear fairly frequently and indeed quite rightly on our playlists. This is Sarah Cracknell from Saint Etienne. It's not her first solo record, though, is it? It's just her first one for a while.
Now, she made one about 15 years ago, which has had a bit of a second life recently, because she had a beautiful song featured on Saint Etienne's How We Used to Live film that came out last year, and that was called Ready or Not. It was a beautiful kind of widescreen orchestral sort of piece of pop. That was from that album, and just serendipitously, it's kind of reminded us, you know, what a sort of, you know, mesmerizing voice he has. In a way, it's quite an underrated voice, because it is it's a pop voice, but she sings in a slightly low register these days, and there's just something lovely about the kind of reflective quality that her voice kind of has these days. And this new album, which I think is magnificent, utilises that to really wonderful effect.
Okay, this is On the Swings from Red Kite by Sarah Cracknell. Sarah Cracknell with On the Swings from her upcoming solo album, Red Kite. Pete, you're right about that melancholy she's always had, even on those great sumptuous, or especially indeed on those sumptuous Saint-Étienne pop epics, things like Hobart Paving and Avenue. I don't want to say it's very difficult to talk. It's weirdly difficult to praise pop music without sounding like you're patting it on the head and being incredibly patronising.
Oh, yeah, one of my most hated things is when people say, oh, yeah, that's a really great pop record. Like, it kind of deserves special conditions.
That's exactly the phrase I was attempting to avoid Hobart Paving and Avenue. But they are great pop records, but I'm trying to underline the great rather than the pop there. But
yeah.
Do you think that the melancholy in Cracknell's voice was what actually made them or lifted them above sort of the ordinary pop, if you will? Because people have done other versions of those, especially of Hobart Paving, which were entirely dreadful.
Yeah, I think it is a bit like, I think the reason it works so well, especially, you know, she had that slightly kind of helium sort of bubblegum pop quality to her voice. And and I think what Bob and Pete were kind of maybe unconsciously doing was sort of, you know, creating almost like a false memory, or sort of like a childhood memory of 60s pop, and just kind of subtly setting it in a kind of modern context. So you immediately felt nostalgic listening to Saint-Étienne when actually a lot, you know, it was state-of-the-art pop music. It wasn't, but there was just something, there was just a quality within, sort of hardwired into their music, that made you somehow feel that you were enjoying pop in the same way that you might have enjoyed it if you were a kind of 7-year-old kid in 1967.
We'll move finally along to your third choice, which is the Catenary Wires. Now, this, as I understand it, is the latest incarnation of Tallulah Gosch. There would be those of us who would argue that the first incarnation was already one too many, perhaps. Tallulah Gosch, I mean, how to explain them to people who may have missed them the first time? They were twee.
Well, yeah, I see. I don't think. I mean, twee was obviously a pejorative term and to some, obviously, it continues to be a pejorative term. But I think, you know, in a funny, this may sound corny, but in a funny kind of way, I think that whole post C86 shambling kind of Sarah sort of subgenre of music that took place, it was a little bit, I think it had a bit of a kind of political currency in its own way, but small p political currency. It was
small p, probably with a little smiley face drawn in and cat's ears and, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
I think it was essentially, its aesthetic was a sort of anti-rock one, anti-braggadocio one, and the kind of machismo that you got in a sort of post-Live Aid climate.
An attitude which, ironically enough, was a massive influence on Nirvana.
Well, the Tallulah Gosh attitude.
Yeah.
Well, Nirvana were kind of conflicted in themselves. You know, they both wanted to be an unreconstructed rock band, but they also wanted to be a kind of post-feminist, sort of inclusive, indie-friendly sort of outfit with fantastic solos. So I think Tallulah Gosh, and in a funny kind of way, I think it's quite a... there's a kind of fearlessness at the heart of that sort of shambling sort of aesthetic, which it's in some ways it's the opposite of what it kind of seems to be. You know, these I remember sort of a lot of my friends who would kind of wear sort of, you know, floppy fringed anorak, wearing fey looking kind of, you know, fragile little flowers, who would have to kind of walk home, you know, get off the night bus and from whatever indie night they'd been to, and walk out, go past all these kind of fun pubs where football casuals would chase them down the road. And that's a pretty kind of hard thing to do. And so I think there's a kind of method. I think, you know, I feel quite warmly towards that whole sort of cult. And, you know, to be fair, the sort of Amelia and Steve, I think her partner, who are in this new group called the Catenary Wires, have improved as songwriters throughout. And what they do in some ways isn't a million miles away from what Sarah's doing these days, which is a sort of a melancholy, kind of grown-up, reflective update on what Tallulah Gosh used to do.
So it's not where they unveil their bourbon-swilling southern rock direction.
No, it's kind of, I think it's just sort of, music for sort of, music for a wet Tuesday afternoon spent in your local library.
No, there's a quote for the posters. This is the Catenary Wires with Intravenous.
Intravenous, nothing ever comes between us. It's the only way that we know. Intervenes us, see through pipes and plastic levers, but I'll gasp for breath if it goes.
The Catenary Wires, Intravenous, the third and final choice of our music review guest, Pete Perfides. That does still, I mean, you're right in linking it, I guess, to an extent with what St. Etienne and that Sarah Cracknell track we heard earlier were doing. Do you think ultimately, and this is a big question to end the segment on, that pop of any sort does require that undertow of melancholy, which that clearly has?
Yeah, because then, you know, if you don't have that, if you don't have pop songs that do that, then it will just become exclusively the domain of fatuous goons like Pitbull. And that's just, then we may as well all just go and do something else instead.
Pete Perfides, thank you very much for joining us. That brings us to the end of today's show. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Andrew Muller. My producers were Holly Fisher, Fernando Augusto Pacheco and Bill Luti. Join us again tomorrow at roughly this time for our weekly theatre review. Until then, it's goodbye from this programme, goodbye from me, and thanks for listening.